Well, I think the blessing in the chaos that's obviously occurring is that a lot of what's been happening behind the scenes, invisibly, is now out in the open. It's not as if corruption just started. Dishonesty in high places, manipulation and deceit and lies, and all that we're seeing so obviously now out in the open, that's been going on for decades. So I think a lot of us are, much as we feel embarrassed, disgusted, alarmed by what's occurring, we're also grateful that it's finally coming out into the open where we can see it and then perhaps have a chance to deal with it. And my wife and I were at a concert today, and one of the lyrics from a beautiful choral piece really struck home with me, and I think encapsulates the attitude a lot of people have here as we, you know, grapple with what's going on, and that is, a mind at peace with all below. Isn't that a beautiful poetic statement? To have a mind that's at peace with all below. And that's not sanctioning denial. Personally, I read the news. I have various sources that I study every day. But I feel that there's a skill to develop in being able to witness what's going on, develop your own activism to try and help without having a disturbed mind, having a calm mind so that regardless of what I'm doing, I'm simultaneously offering some peace into whatever the situation is.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I am Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Ashland in Oregon in the USA, I have Will Wilkinson, and his website is willtwilkinson.com. And who I've been fortunate to have interviewed a number of occasions, as Will is an author, a mentor, a presenter, specializing in quantum explorations of potential and possibility of humanity evolving our spirituality to unrealized capabilities into a world of peace and promise. So, kia ora and welcome, Will.
Well, Tim, it's so wonderful to hear your voice again. It just takes me right back to our visit there a couple of years ago.
I know, and how time just seems to, get behind us in this very hurried world that we're in. And boy. So, Will, can you tell us, you live in Ashland, Oregon, which is a small town that is very active metaphysically as a community and essentially pioneering the question, how do humans live on our planet today? Are you able to tell our listeners a little more about what's happening in your area and then possibly expand it over the USA, especially as to what the general consensus is as well?
Well, thank you, Tim. Ashland is a pocket of high consciousness people, and I discovered that when my wife and I visited here many years ago now. We've lived here now for 17 years. I found myself sitting in the sauna at the local YMCA and was overhearing a conversation about quantum physics. And I thought, this is the town for me.
Yes.
Because here were these guys sweating in a sauna, having a very enlightened conversation. I mean, I learned a lot in those 10 minutes. And so we moved here, and now we live outside of town, about 15 minutes in the forest. And the network of people here never ceases to astound me. There are people in the hills who, well, they'd be famous, except they prefer to be kind of invisible. But you have retired diplomats. You have spiritual teachers, like Neil Donald Walsh lives here. Gary Zukav lives here. Jean Houston is here. And then you've got all kinds of therapists and healers and the general population, which is about 20,000. Just to give you a snapshot, we have a very good organic food co-op here with over 20,000 members. So there's more members in the co-op than there are people in the town, which means there's people from outside of town who are members of the co-op. And it's just an absolutely joyful place to live with people who are aware, people who are deeply concerned about what's going on in the world, but bring joy to it rather than despair.
Very much so. And not only that, Oregon's the only state in America that has a return on their soft drink bottles or their cans, and that's big to me. That's really something.
Well, we're proud of that and a number of other things, too. Like, I don't think there's any other place in America where the police cars have a actual insignia that says peace officer.
Oh,
that's recent. It just changed from police officer to peace officer, because Ashland is an official city of peace acknowledged in the United Nations, and our police chief, wonderful man, he could be on the phone with us right now, Tim, and he would be able to keep up with this conversation and contribute a lot to it. He's a wonderful man.
Yes, this is what we need, is to localize everything so that you know who's who in your area, and, of course, to have the police as a part of the community that you share with us. Fantastic.
Yeah, we have a very active group that is dealing with any abuse or violence in the area. We don't have a great deal, but we have a citizens group that's very active with that. There's a lot of attention being put on the homeless issue, poverty. So it's a very proactive community. People here, there are a number of people who are retired and have a good amount of money, but there's a lot of philanthropy here, a lot of support, a lot of social support.
Yes, yes, it's a microcosm of how we would like it to be in the world. Can you expand the thinking, what's happening in America? Because we're getting news, and there's a gigantic battle, political battle raging, but yet there's still initiatives happening. This is correct, no matter what. I know I've got friends in Santa Fe and Santa Cruz, and or I'll say Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Santa Cruz up in California, and they are always wanting to initiate positive moves, change. You know, the whole 5G thing too is here with us that we're having to sort through. Can you tell us, is there anything there that you say is a wonderful thing that's happening in America?
Well, I think the blessing in the chaos that's obviously occurring is that a lot of what's been happening behind the scenes, invisibly, is now out in the open. It's not as if corruption just started. Dishonesty in high places, manipulation and deceit and lies and all that we're seeing so obviously now out in the open, that's been going on for decades. So I think a lot of us are, much as we feel embarrassed, disgusted, alarmed by what's occurring, we're also grateful that it's finally coming out into the open where we can see it and then perhaps have a chance to deal with it. And my wife and I were at a concert today, and one of the lyrics from a beautiful choral piece really struck home with me and I think encapsulates the attitude a lot of people have here as we, you know, grapple with what's going on, and that is, a mind at peace with all below. Isn't that a beautiful poetic statement? To have a mind that's at peace with all below. And that's not sanctioning denial. Personally, I read the news. I have various sources that I study every day. But I feel that there's a skill to develop in being able to witness what's going on, develop your own activism to try and help without having a disturbed mind. Having a calm mind so that regardless of what I'm doing, I'm simultaneously offering some peace into whatever the situation is.
That's very good. Yes. Yes, well, I've just heard recently is that having anger, it just shatters the whole vibe everywhere. And so when something happens now and I see somebody do something wrong, I just see, oh, well, there's another brother or sister having a huge difficulty either accepting something or dealing with something. And so I remain in some sort of quiet equilibrium and yet go over to them and see what I can do to help. And so, yes, it's having now a more transparent world is, I think, going to help us bring more clarity to what's going on. And this leads me to another question, because, Will, you said you are a presenter of quantum explorations. Can you briefly give an explanation of this, as from my standpoint, as we, in essence, when we delve deep into the subatomic realm, we see that the makeup of every material thing in existence, we realize that everything is just an energy field within a greater energy field. So how would you explain what you do, specializing in quantum explorations and also love, which is what this interview will eventually lead into?
Well, what a great question. I mean, we could spend the whole hour on this easily. I'm sure your listeners are aware the word quantum conjure up a lot of different ideas, but I'm sure that there's kind of a general awareness of quantum referring to a field, energy field, that is at the core of everything. And I think many people now know that most of what we consider solid is actually space, about 99% space. And even an atom with protons, electrons, neutrons is mostly space. So when you asked, what do I do relative to exploring the quantum world, it's really exploring energy. And the first principle that I'm so curious about is what's known as the observer effect, which simply stated means that the observer influences whatever they're observing. So the way I look at things influences what I see. In the actual quantum experiments that are done, this often relates to the introduction of light. To see something, you have to introduce light. And when you introduce light, it changes what you're looking at. So what you're looking at only is the way it is when you see it. When you're not looking, it could be entirely different, because the moment you look, it changes what you're looking at. So the way I extrapolate this back into three-dimensional experience is that I want to express the qualities that I would like to see the world made of. So, you know, love, which you mentioned, is an invisible quality until I express it in some form. I might say loving words. I might touch my wife on the shoulder with love. I might give her a loving look. There are ways to express that invisible quality that lives in the quantum field as energy, to bring it out into the three-dimensional world in some kind of form. So my focus is to bring into this dimension qualities of energy that I would like to see this world made of. So love, compassion, forgiveness, joy, empowerment, etc., etc. My priority is to express that regardless of what's going on in the situation. I'm more concerned to be proactive rather than reactive and create the world I'm living in as a result of my choices about the energy I express rather than just reacting to circumstances.
Yes, it's to find this deep inner place within ourselves to be able to instantly take this all in and still come out with a feeling of mindfulness, of care, of wanting to improve the situation on a moment-by-moment basis.
Well, and I want to pick up on something else you said a little earlier about anger. I've really grown my understanding over the years, and I think it's fair to say that I lived, as many people have done, a fair portion of my exploratory life on what's known by some as the spiritual bypass. And, yep, you know, a bypass here in America, anyway, is a road that bypasses usually the town center or industrial stuff or something. And there's no exits, there's no activity, you just bypass and you just zip by. And the spiritual bypass is a term that's used to describe kind of the positive thinking movement where everything is rosy. It's like a Walt Disney World, and it afflicts people and causes them to not watch the news, to try and suppress all their dark emotions and live in kind of a rosy-hued world, which is very unrealistic. So having spent some time on the spiritual bypass but left it a while ago, I've got more in touch with darker emotions like anger and even rage and grief. And I feel that it's very important to be able to express the full range of emotion, but the key is to do it in a safe place. I'm fortunate to be part of a men's group. I have a group that meet every second Sunday on the phone, 8 of us from all over the world. We've known each other over 30 years. We feel safe to share anything with each other, not just the nice stuff, but anything dark we're able to get out. And then locally, I have various groups that meet, and we give each other permission to express anything we need to. And personally, I've really benefited from expressing anger and even rage when it's in a setting where it turns out to be something cathartic and healing. If I'm just raging at my neighbor or somebody who cuts me off on the road, I think that's destructive. But therapeutically, it can be very healing and liberating.
Yes, yes, well, we've got 7.7 billion beings out there sharing breath at the moment. We have work to do, well, to be able to let people realize that we are a global family in the birth canal to a new reality. And I guess this is what one of the things that Barbara Marx Hubbard, who recently died, she really got that through to me, that we as a whole humanity are in this situation of growing into a new realm, a new understanding, and we have to deal with our shadow and essentially, should we say, shoehorn out any shadow out of our being so that we can really participate as a localized family and get on with solving the challenges that are ahead of us.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Barbara, a dear friend of mine. I worked with Barbara for about a year in Santa Barbara. My wife and I actually lived in a home with her, and what a wonderful being, and really just celebrate her life. And it was fascinating in my time with Barbara, and actually we did a number of radio programs together. She's great on media. She's just so bright and clear. But I found Barbara was very fascinated to explore with me close-in things, by which I mean personal relationships, what was happening in the neighborhood. Because Barbara was a futurist, and she was such a big thinker. Just a remarkable mind, spirit. So for her, when I knew her, her evolution was to get very local and to really start paying attention to, you know, what was happening right closest to her. And I'll never forget that about her, her willingness to find some balance there.
Yes, yes, I did have the good fortune of interviewing her and actually meeting her up in Hawaii many, many years ago. So can we take this through that essentially, we're spiritual beings having an earth experience in this world that we are, and we are so much in need of being able to come together in a community dedicated to helping each other and making this world a better place. And you brought out the book Now or Never 2 years ago because you decided, I'm wanting to make a stand. We have to call things for what they are. And this is one of the challenges that we have got, is to find out what the core of our being is and how to express love. And with the book Now or Never, you made a stand and now you're taking it a lot deeper. Can you explain a little more to our listeners?
Well, thank you. Yes, my newest book is called The Noon Club, and I think we'll talk about that a little later. But you already gave us a very important clue when you mentioned the word shadow, because I think it's important to acknowledge our evolution, our growth in understanding around what the shadow is. One of the ways I describe this change is to quote or to reference a wonderful series of books, a trilogy by an Oregon author, Ursula K. Le Guin, who wrote a trilogy called The Earth Sea. Trilogy.
Yes, yes.
Fantasy series. And have you read that, Tim?
I've read some of hers. They came in front of me, but I think I got distracted halfway through. But
well, it's a brilliant, brilliant story. And why I bring it up is that it's really a story about a young man being chased by a demonic force. And he finally, when he's exhausted, gives up and he turns to face it and accept his fate. But it retreats from him, so then he chases it. And the final confrontation reveals that this is actually his shadow that he became separated from, and he neither will be defeated by it or defeat it. What's required is to reintegrate with his own shadow. So I think that's a very evolved understanding of what's sometimes called shadow work, which unfortunately for many people seems to mean getting rid of the shadow. But you can't do that as long as there's light. if I'm standing in the light, I'm going to cast a shadow. That's just the way it works. So, and the bigger I am, the bigger my shadow is going to be. But can I own my shadow? That's the question. Can I integrate it into myself? So I think we are seeing right now a real shift from the kind of the age of the enlightened guru who sits on the dais and has no shadow and just speaks words of wisdom to all of us who are struggling with ours, to acknowledge that we all have a shadow and we're supposed to have a shadow. But we're meant to integrate it so that we become whole human beings rather than half human beings hiding in the light. Light, after all, is only possible out of darkness. To have light, you have to have darkness. So this is a different understanding, and we already mentioned the spiritual bypass, and it's in the same family, to become whole human beings and learn what it means to be that and not just lost somewhere on the bright side of things.
I hear you. Yes, I know. I have good-hearted friends who see everything from a sunny-side-up perspective. And yes, and there's work to be done. Yes, well, I mean, we're at this particular stage again where we have to make, shall we say, a move. And here in New Zealand, I've been involved at a different level, basically drawing the strings of communities or local communities together to allow people to see that all over New Zealand in these little towns, just like Ashland is a special town in Oregon, and like Santa Fe has got its offerings for New Mexico. I mean, I'm encouraging people to come together as cells and then clusters of cells in a localized situation, because we can learn a lot from each other to face our shadow. And if we at heart have got good, trusting friends who are courageous and honest, through our friends we can also be helped to find this love within us that we can truly express and feel that we are at one with them in the so-called field.
Well, and a real clue, I think, is showing up in the whole gender controversy that's sweeping the world, really, where younger people are showing up as gender fluid, and they're refusing the stereotype of male or female because they choose to identify as something beyond that. And I think it's very confusing right now and very chaotic, and it seems to be necessary to get through all that to arrive somewhere creative. I think ultimately we're being called to identify as something beyond the human. You already mentioned this in your introduction, I think, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. Well, as spiritual beings, we are one. You know, the color of our human bodies doesn't matter, where we were born, the language we speak, even the religion we have. If we can come together and acknowledge our sameness, we're all unique, but what we do share is the sameness of spirit. We're all part of the spirit of life. And by the way, this includes animals and plants. It's one of the great gifts my wife and I celebrate every day, living out here in the woods in Oregon, surrounded by these grandfather, grandmother trees, a stream running right by our home. We have all kinds of animals in the forest. Deer come up and drink from our stream, and they walk right up on our deck sometimes. It's a community of life. And humans, I feel, are the only species who've isolated themselves away. Any science fiction film you watch, if they show a depiction of the future, usually it's dystopian. In other words, it's screwed up. It's not healthy. But the main feature is there's never any depiction of nature, or rarely. It's usually glass and metal and dark streets and
rocks.
And rocks, but no trees, no animals. It's just all made-up stuff from technology. So I think emerging from an isolated human identity, and this is one of the themes in my book, Now or Never, so I had so many references to plant intelligence and animal intelligence in there, we can begin to rejoin the community of life and realize I'm not just a human disconnected from all other species. I'm a spirit in a human body. I'm sharing a kinship with all life, no matter what it happens to look like, from bacterial to the largest life form imaginable.
Yes, well, it's like the Latin term, anime mundi, which is world soul, and that as they see it, is that all living creatures have an essence, and this essence is anchored within their body, and just like a soul is supposedly anchored in our body. And can I just take this one step further and then you can fly with it, is that, I mean, the Indian or the Hindu term namaste, I honour the light behind your eyes, I honour the God within you, is a clue to the fact that they're not looking actually at the human body, they're looking at the light behind their eyes, because that's where we are a spiritual being having a earth experience.
Well, yes, and I submit this is something intuitive for all of us that we all know. We know this.
Yes.
And one of the values of a wise spiritual teacher is they can remind us of this fact. You know, we even have a phrase for it. We'll say, oh, I know where you're coming from. Very interesting phrase. At least that's an American term. What does that mean? Well, I interpret it to mean I sense where you're coming from in essence, that you're not just in this body. You're not just the mind, the words that you're speaking, the actions you're taking. You are some ineffable essence that is coming from another dimension into this world. The example I use sometimes is imagine going to the jungle and meeting a tribe of indigenous people who had no contact with civilization. They didn't have any awareness of technology. Now, if you took a big TV, you know, one of the big box TVs, and you turned it on and you played them a program, they would have no choice but to believe that there were tiny people inside that box. They would look at the screen and assume that there were little people in that box. And if you tried to explain to them that, well, no, the real people are maybe thousands of miles away, transmitting invisibly through the air and landing in that box, and that was what we were seeing, they would think that was impossible. And then if you told them, and, you know, those people aren't even doing what they're doing right now, that was recorded 2 years ago.
Yes.
So it's not even in this present moment. They would be baffled even more. So here we are. Here I am transmitting through my human body, just like you are, Tim, and everybody who's listening and everybody else. But we aren't here. We're coming from somewhere else. We're coming from a quantum field. We're coming as an invisible energy, a force that's transmitting into and broadcasting through our human capacities of body, mind, and heart. So when we embrace that identity, we can just marvel at the miracle that every single human being and every single living form is. Gone is the prejudice, the fighting, the differentiation. Oh, he's got a different color skin than me. He's so different. Well, not really. It's just a different color TV set. You know, the transmission is slightly different, but it's coming from the same place. We live at the same source, which also, back to quantum terms, is beyond time. We shift as we explore the quantum world and become more familiar there. We shift from the field of Chronos, which is linear time, to Kairos, which is timelessness. So our experience changes from being dominantly ruled by the linear clock, past, present, future, to more of a dream of the moment, where just like in a film where they can do flashbacks and then they can go into the future in imagination, that's more what real life is like when we're coming out of Kairos, living in the quantum field.
Mm, yes, well, that's we need to take stock of that.
Quite an exploration, isn't it?
That's right, that's right. Yes, because what I'm finding at the moment, Will, and I've been doing it now for the last year or so, numerous times during the day, I'll be walking around where I work, and then I'll just ask the question, how much love do I have in the world at this moment? And it allows me to take stock, and then I feel very thankful because, one, I'm able to remember that, and just about in every case, I'm actually feeling a lot of love in the world. And this is a meditation that I've been going through over the last 3 years, that I'll just be doing stuff, and then I'll just say, how much love have you got for the world or for existence? And
beautiful.
Yes, and I'm finding it's happening more and more. And I honestly feel that once we commit, it's our intention. And I think you are going to want to talk a little bit about our intention so that we can start to, I won't say have more control, but have more awareness of certain things that we do during the day to bring us more into focus as a warm-hearted, living, loving, spiritual being having an earth experience.
Well, how beautifully put, Tim. And first I want to just back up to what you said, the first part of your comment about love and how much love are you experiencing moment to moment. You're very fortunate. I mean, you're creating your experience, and I hope that our listeners are getting the point that we all of us are. And you're a great example of creating a loving experience. It's heartbreaking to realize how many people are not experiencing that. A recent poll in America revealed that over 50% of people who were polled admitted they had no one to confide in. Now, I just found that stunning, because I have so many friends, and I know you do too, Tim, where you can share your heart and share your doubt and your concerns. So I really want to emphasize that, you know, we're very fortunate, the in networks of people who we can share that love with. I think that's the first thing to really emphasize.
Yes, thank you for that, because what I have noticed watching American movies for the last, I don't know, 50 years or so, longer actually, but most people in movies that we see in the States, they have very few friends. And time and time again, when they get into trouble, they have very few friends and no networks of neighbours and community to fall back on. And one of the reasons, of course, that they can't put all this into a two-hour movie or a one-and-a-half-hour movie. But I notice that there is this loneliness among all sorts of people in America because they just don't have friends. You don't see them sitting down at a table with 10 or 15 or 20 people talking, and the movie shows that they all know each other. And so I see the separation being driven through the media of movies.
Yeah, well, it's true. So many people live a big part of their life on screens, which is very unrealistic, and even people sitting opposite each other at a coffee table or a lunch table, and they're on their phones, on their screens, and they're not present. That was the second part of your comment a moment ago, being able to live in the moment. And it takes practice, like anything else. And this is where meditation is so essential, that a person still the mind and learn how to just be. You know, we're human beings, not human doings. But you'd never know it, because so much of our life is about what we're doing. I'm not saying that it's not important to do things. In fact, my book Now or Never encourages readers to get off their butts, you know, get off their meditation mat and become an activist in the world. But to do it with the right energy. I call it being a visionary activist, and this is where intention comes into it. And, you know, intention is something that happens in the present moment. You may be looking into the future and imagining what you'd like to create, but you're doing that in the present moment. We need to book some tickets for a trip we plan to take. Well, the trip is in the future, but I'll be booking those tickets in the present moment. So an intention is just being able to time travel in imagination and set up something for the future in the present moment. And I really submit that, in fact, I'm doing a conference on this up in Seattle in March next year on time travel. And I submit that all of us are time traveling all the time. You know, we're resident in the present moment. And from here, I can cast my mind back and remember what I did this morning. And I can look forward into the future and imagine what I'll be doing later tonight or tomorrow. So we're always time traveling in our mind. We don't need to take our body with us. So the point is to be present in the moment and then travel in the quantum field wherever we want to go without losing our centering in the moment.
Sounds very good. I am speaking with Will Wilkinson from the United States in his book Now or Never and The Noon Club. Yes, I know, having travelled a lot myself from a standpoint of global travel over years, and my imagination can take me into the future and my memory can take me back into the past, and it's quite profound, really, that we are, our body is only sort of a tuning fork at many levels.
Well, it's true, and I know some of your listeners will be conversant with dream work. My wife and I just took a dream class. and I've been applying the principles and really applying my dreams to my real life, looking for synchronicities. And increasingly I'm aware that this is actually a dream too.
Yes.
We believe it's real, but there's a lot of reason to think that it's just a different kind of dream. And anyone who studies their dreams and does a dream journal and begins to look for synchronicities in their waking life with what's going on in their dreaming life begins to blur the line between the two, so that we become less and less certain of what's quote-unquote real and more aware that we're exploring a mystery, that ultimately life is a mystery, and we're exploring it and finding out moment to moment what it really means. And I think that's just marvelous. It keeps us young, because they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, who wants to be an old dog? Why not be a young pup? I mean, I just completed teaching a class here at our college, and when I was being introduced to the students on the first day of the class, I had given the person introducing me a couple of notes, and so she was reading from them, and she said, "Oh, and Will has steadfastly refused to ever think of himself as an expert, because he enjoys being a student of life, and he plans to learn at least as much as any of you during this class." And that was the truth. That's what happened. And I said, if you don't position yourself as an expert, you don't have anything to defend.
Yes.
You know, I didn't stand up in front of the class and pretend to be an expert at the topic. I said, look, I've had some experience. I know some things. Happy to share them with you. Hope they'll be useful. I also want to tap into the genius that you bring. And we had a wonderful class. We just completed, and you know, they all want to keep going. So we're going to start another class.
Well, thank you. Well, this is... Children are my favourites. I'm finding that at the holiday park where I work, there's heaps and heaps of wonderful children. And I get to know them quite well, because they see me working around the park all the time, come up and talk. And just recently I've been asking the ones that I know, I say to them, do you know the purpose of existence? And I might be, and they will usually look blankly back, and then they'll say they don't know, and then I will say, the purpose for existence is to find out the purpose for existence. And this is a real interesting one, because one of them the other day said, gosh, I never even thought of that. And I saw them 3 hours later, and she said, you know what, I've been thinking about that all day. And this is the beauty of it, is that getting those children when they're young, I feel, is really, really important, because they want to hear something far more deeper than the triviality that they're hearing basically in the general world that they're living in, because they want to connect, they want to know where they come from. And so I have such a wonderful relationship with them.
Well, you know, young people are less programmed than we are. They haven't been in civilized society as long, so they're retaining more of their innocent wisdom. And, you know, my attitude is, if I'm in a learning environment, what's required is to culture a field that inspires the genius to come out in everyone who's there. And I would much rather hear something profound spoken by someone else than to say it myself. I mean, the person who's talking isn't learning anything, right? The
people
who are listening might learn. So I like to listen as much as I can, and when it's my time to contribute, I'm happy to speak. But I think this is something to really remember in the bulk of daily life as well. We have two ears and one mouth for a good reason. And to show up as a listener whose intent, we spoke about intention earlier, whose intent on encouraging others to express the genius they know in a field that encourages them to feel safe to do that, I just think that's a wonderful way to go through life. And it grows tremendous friendships. It's amazing. If you're a great listener, people will say, oh, what a good communicator.
Maybe
saying very little, but you're listening, and a person can feel when you're really listening to them, as opposed to just waiting for them to stop so you can talk.
Yeah, it's wonderful, because I ask them, did you hear that bird? And they say, what? And I can say, there's a cotario there, or there's a grey warbler. And they think, oh, no, I didn't hear those. And so the bird sounds, and one of the, I won't take any more time, I just want to say this one thing. I talk to these kids a lot, especially those who are really alive and have, you know, heaps of happiness and go in them. And I mention to them, I say, hey, you know, you're in the candle. I can feel it. And I ask them about their inner candle. And they look at me and I say, well, look, do you know what candles like? They like oxygen.
Yeah.
And you know, so just deeply breathe. Just deeply breathe. And take this oxygen in. And but, you know, we can't even see this oxygen. We might not be able to see the candle, but we can't see the oxygen, but we know that oxygen makes the candle bright. And you establish some sort of rapport with them. They know you're your friend.
Yeah, exactly. Wonderful, Tim.
Yeah, so you're talking about, again, at noon, that's when the sun is the highest above our head, summer solstice. It's virtually right above our head. And so we have soul above us. We have the soles of our feet touching the earth. And when we put our tummy on our belly button, that's our solar plexus. And so there's a lot of soul going on. And we trust that in that moment we can love as well. And this is the noonday story that you want to unfold.
Well, I like to give credit where it's due. And the Noon Club was invented by someone back in the 80s. I made contact with them, and their practice is very simple, just pausing every day at noon for a short prayer or a little mini meditation. And at one time, there were many thousands of people doing this around the world. And then I did it for a number of years and kind of lost track of them. And then a few years ago, I decided to revive the practice. Couldn't find any trace of them, whoever they are, who started it, but I just began again, and now there are hundreds. I don't think there's thousands of us yet, but I did write a book on it, and the book is getting airplay in different countries. So more and more people are setting their smartphones for noon, and when the chime goes off, they just stop what they're doing for a little moment of quiet. Some people have a little declaration. The one that I like is, this is the moment. Something wonderful is happening. I'm creating the future with love. So I'll just say that silently to myself. If I'm with someone and I feel they might enjoy it, I'll ask their permission. And if they're willing, I'll say it out loud. And we just share a few moments of silence to feel our energy broadcasting into mass consciousness. So my intention is to get millions of people doing this all over the world in every time zone at noon so that we get a pulsation of energy moving through consciousness every noon. Noon here in Pacific time, noon where you are, noon in Austria, in Alaska, in Israel, anywhere in the world at noon. A number of people having this little mini meditation. And I feel confident this can make a difference.
It's like a 24-hour heartbeat.
Yeah.
And it allows everybody just to stop and plug in. It's very important, and I must admit, this morning I came in, and it was just before noon, and I got distracted. And then just after noon, I realized, oh my gosh. So, but the importance is that we need to take our time out, because I found myself slowing down a lot more, which I need to, because there's so much more in the world that's happening that we have to take this in-breath, I call it. Take this in-breath and dwell on this and be thankful.
Well, I think, Tim, that's wonderful counsel for everyone, to slow down to the speed of life. Life moves at a certain speed, and it's not frantic. A lot of people are just simply moving too fast and missing the opportunity to, you know, just simply enjoy being alive. So what a simple instruction, just slow down and enjoy life.
Yes, yes. Well, I think this is, this is where you go for a walk in the woods, and being in nature, I think, is the most important thing that we can do at this moment to recharge our body.
Yeah, and there's opportunities. Some people live like we do in the forest, so it's something we can do every day. But someone who lives in the city, it might be as simple as having a house plant and developing a relationship with the plant on your desk. It may sound silly, but plants are very intelligent, and there's a lot of data out that prove that plants have language. They're talking to us, they're listening, they're always talking to each other. We can develop a relationship with that world. My wife is tremendous with greenery. She once had a plant business and took care of large hotels and made sure all their plants survived. But she just is very conversant with that world, and she can keep pretty much any plant alive. I can't say the same thing for myself.
I see. Yes, well, I'm fortunate. My mother had green fingers, and I've got green thumbs. And so that, again, is getting in the garden and doing life from a standpoint, I find, that have veneration for a big tree, being thankful and grateful. And this is where I, too, have worked my energy to, in many ways, pay it forward. Well, pay it forward where I can, and random acts of kindness. I'm taking more time when I go into just walking up the street. If I see somebody's having a little difficulty, like the other day somebody was coming out of a doorway, and I thought, oh, stop, allow that person to come through there. Just small things.
Wonderful. It always comes down to that, the little things. I have often laughed at myself over the years. I've written books, I've given talks all around the world, and often I'll meet somebody who will say something like, you know, I've really been looking forward to meeting you again because 6 years ago you came and you did a seminar here and I've never forgotten something you said. And then they'll proceed to tell me something that happened over lunch or, you know, having a cup of tea. Rarely is it something that was delivered during the official event. And I just chuckle to myself because, you know, where does the real impact occur? You know, there are things that are said from a stage, you know, through video or whatever, that are important. But often it's in those little personal interchanges. I'm in a lot of conferences these days, and I love the break times. I love to just hang out with people, and you're standing in line waiting for a cup of tea or something, and that's often, I find, where the real depth occurs. Those minutes, those opportunities are available all the time. You know, getting some petrol, waiting for some food, talking to the waitress. Every moment is an opportunity to broadcast the qualities we'd like to see the world made of. And I don't think any one is any bigger than any other. It's all just a moment in the quantum field where we can express the qualities we'd like to see the future made of.
It just makes me laugh. You reminded me, I was getting petrol this morning, and as I got back into my car, out of the car next door to me was this little kid who's, he's about, I don't know, nine now, from the holiday park. And first thing I said to him, "Hi, Sammy, how are you? Do you know what the purpose of life is?" And he turned around, he says, "Yes, to find the purpose of existence."
Really? That's great, Tim.
Yeah. These are the little things that happen.
That's true.
He got out directly. I had to laugh. And it was because 3 days ago I asked him, and I said, "Do you know what the purpose of life is, Sammy?" And he said, "A purpose." And then I repeated it to him. And this is about the third time I'd done it, but today, on the fourth time, he got it.
Oh, that's great. Well, who knows the repercussions of something as simple as that, how that young life will develop, and who he'll repeat that to, and maybe someday he'll have children and tell them, and they'll tell their children, and on it goes. And we drop a little pebble in the ocean, and it, or in the lake, and the ripples proceed out.
Well, people need to know that you're a friend, that you're...
Yeah.
We want to be able to help people because there are other people who are having far more difficulty than, say, myself. And so I see it as a state of privilege to be able to say, well, look, we get by with a little help of our friends and do what we can. And I feel a lot of contentment. And I want to take this a next step there because we have joy. And you've mentioned joy too well. Joy is so important, but I find that a lot of people are also getting mixed up thinking that pleasure is joy. And pleasure is not necessarily joy. Pleasure is lovely to experience, but it does not necessarily mean that you're in your heart of hearts that you feel at one or happy with the universe or the divine or even happy with being with God. So pleasure and joy are different.
And well, they are, and they're both wonderful. You know, I have pleasure in the morning when I sit and have my cup of coffee after I've done my exercise and stretches and meditation, and I just sit and enjoy sipping on a great cup of rich decaf coffee. That's pleasure. You know, I'm very grateful that I can do that. But, you know, the joy you're speaking of is more the euphoria at connecting with the source of life or the source of love. And I feel that when I go outside to get in my car and I stop and I look up at the canopy of trees and I feel the moving in the wind and I feel that same movement inside my own self. And that can send me into euphoria, a real depth of joy. And that's not because of anything I'm, you know, getting, like a cup of coffee or even a relationship with a person. It's just witnessing and experiencing the magnificence of life itself, of which I'm a part. That's the real joy that, you know, is potential in every moment. Even if we've got a sore leg, even if we're having challenges in a relationship, even if our car's got trouble, if we're having challenges at work, if we're upset about politics, haven't got as much money as we want, in the moment, there's still the potential for that kind of joy. As long as our heart is beating, we're connected with the whole of life, and we can celebrate that in the moment.
We need more celebration in the moment.
Yeah. Well, I'm alive, and I have friends. You know, I've got you there in New Zealand. And, you know, we just have a privileged life. I have food to eat. I've got a roof over my head. I have a beautiful cat, a new cat who loves me and, you know, ransacks the house regularly and provides a lot of entertainment. And, you know, I write a column in the newspaper occasionally, and I have deep philosophical discussions with friends. We get into politics. I get out and I do my activism, supporting local causes, interview the police chief, etc., etc. So who wouldn't be grateful? And every listener can think of their blessings and just count them and go, wow, I'm better off than 99.9% of the people on the planet.
Thank you. And this is the truth. And New Zealanders, we're so fortunate in this country. We can become so complacent on the other side of the equation. And I've came back from overseas recently. I was in Greece, and very profound civilization it was. And when I was at Delphi, I went and I meditated. I climbed the fence and went in after hours, so to speak. And I came away thinking the human species needs a new principle, a unifying principle. And this is really something that I'm grappling with now. And of course, it has to include love, it has to include a lightheartedness, it has to include family and community and working and being together. And also, when I came back, I realized that I needed to plant some trees. And so I went out and got 3 days of planting on a cooperative work for the council, actually, and to put trees in the ground. And so some mighty, gigantic totara and kaihikatea are going to grow, but we'll see, trustingly, in 600 to 800 years, still growing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're coming to the end of this wonderful and delightful communication, brother. Is there any one little flurry of that you would like to leave that will, over once it's broadcast, will be out beyond Jupiter in a few hours and half a day beyond Pluto?
They're probably listening out there, Tim. Thank you. I think the simple thing is to invite your listeners to set their phones for noon, and in whatever way is natural for them, to just take a moment away from all the doing, to just be, and to just be in the quantum field and experience that joy that we spoke of a moment ago. We're alive, so much to be grateful for. I would be very thankful if your listeners made the decision right now to just set their phone so it rings every day at noon and just join us in the Noon Club and just increase and spread the word. They can pick up the book on Amazon if they want to. But mainly it's just about pausing at noon for that little meditation. I'd love it if some of your listeners did that.
Yes, we all need to do it. We all need to take time out. Well, and I think this is fantastic, and I'm so glad that you've wanted to share with New Zealanders. Here you are in the Northern Hemisphere, and it's now closing down into autumn, and we're in spring, and we're coming closer and closer to summer. So it's an expansion time here, and it's contraction time for you in the Northern Hemisphere, and this is a time maybe when you are more quieter and more inward-looking, whilst we are wanting to get out in the sunshine and be more expansive and outward-looking. And we live on a magnificent biosphere, or magnificent planet, with a stupendous biosphere of living beings and living things. And and I just am so glad that we can work towards coming together as a global family. And this is, again, what Barbara Marx Hubbard was on about, is that we need to be, shall we say, astute and adroit, and find ways in which we can come together as a human family.
Well, we're doing it, and Tim, you're helping, and I really appreciate what you're doing through your radio show, through your life. You're really an inspiration, Tim.
Thank you, Will. I, like you, well, just a human being, as Ram Dass once said, that he just wanted to be a student of life, and that's what I want to be too, is just to be able to help my neighbour wherever I can, and when I take my last breath, well, that's when the great mystery offers itself up.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll look back and you'll say, well, that was a life well lived.
Yes, and I want to be able to say that for everybody. Let's make this is, as far as I'm concerned, the most important life one can have, because we are at a juncture of so much, from one paradigm to a new paradigm, from one age, the Piscean age, into the Aquarian, the so-called humanitarian age. And so this is our time.
It is indeed. Well, Tim, this was really a pleasure. Thank you so much for fitting this in. And
thank you, Will. It's just lovely speaking with you. Love to you and love to Tashina.
Thanks so much. Bye now.
Cheers, brother. Bye. That was Will Wilkinson of willtwilkinson.com. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send, and remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.7 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world, and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM, and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha, wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say Kia kaha and haere ra.